Hello, Jane.
Do it with your robot one. Start with your robot one.
Hello, Jane. Are you receiving me?
I am receiving you loud and clear.
Long hot days in the shade of some big old tree, making daisy chains and watching all the honeybees.
Oh, we should be on Doctor Who, shouldn't we?
They've never asked me, but I'd be a brilliant Dalek.
You would. You are brilliant at sounding like a Dalek.
Exterminate! Exterminate! Exterminate!
Now, talking of exterminate...
Yeah.
You don't have to exterminate the Italians, do
you? Oh, don't know why I'm laughing. That's a bit mean. So, news from the apiary. Obviously, this week I haven't opened because it's been a bit too cold. The temperature's got to be around, really. I mean, ideally about 14 to 16 degrees to sort of have a quick look. And
is that definitely... because the bees would perish if they came out in any lesser temperature?
Well, it's not really the bees, because, of course, they've got their woolly jackets on. But the larva could be chilled.
Oh.
There is, like, a condition that they can get called chilled brood. And I assume it's because they've been very cold and they've not formed properly.
Oh, that's interesting.
They want to keep the brood. They're really aiming to keep it, if you remember, about 36 degrees. You know, remember they press their bodies onto the developing egg and they like to keep it warm. So if the beekeeper suddenly comes out and, you know, waves it in the chilly spring air, that's, you know, for them, that's just like opening all the doors and windows when you've got a newborn baby.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah.
Understood. Understood.
Good, I'm glad. So, you know, unless you're going to have knitted a few thousand bonnets for them and some woolly shawls, then it's best not to open until the temperature is just right.
Oh, well, thank you for clearing that up.
Yeah, but sorry, Jane.
No, you carry on, please.
Carry on.
Carry on as you were. Ignore me at all times. I am just the interviewer.
Okay. So what I did notice this week when I went up, yesterday in fact, oh my word, the book fasts were absolutely so busy.
Ooh.
Last week I'd taken out their entrance, so I'd taken out the little entrance strip, so now they've got a full strip so they can all come out, you know, all the time. And it was full. The landing board was full of bees and there was bees right across the entrance.
Wow.
And actually, it's still got that chill in the air, but it's not stopping them. They're out. But sadly, I saw about four bees come out the Italian's hive.
Right, and you've not opened that.
Well, remember I opened it last week.
Yes, I mean, you've not opened it since last week.
No, I'm going to just... In fact, so there was hardly anything coming out... And Lynn's bees have now died.
Oh, have they?
Yeah.
When we went to the hive, we did notice that there was no activity whatsoever, where there was a little bit of activity with your Italians.
Mm. So Lynn's queen was still alive. She was just alive, strangely enough.
Oh, wow.
But she did, every other thing was dead and there was no brood in there at all.
Wow.
So... I spoke to the bee inspector and he was going to come this week, but it's not warm enough. So Brian McCallum, you know, my mentor Urban Bees who trained me, Alison Benjamin's husband, he's going to come next Friday because he used to be a regional bee inspector for some time. He doesn't do it anymore, but he's going to come on the podcast and he's going to look through the bees and just tell us what's what. Because, of course, the bee inspector... could come, but he's very busy and he knows Brian and, you know, so he's more than happy for Brian to come and do the inspection. And then whatever there is to report, we can report back to the DEFRA bee inspector.
Right.
Just to let him know. But you know, it's not looking good. And in fact, I thought to myself, shall I wait just till the temperature's a bit warmer, maybe on Sunday? I might just have a look. Because what I'm worried about, if I'm honest, is I'm just worried about other bees going inside the Italians if there's something really bad. You know, like if there is EFB in there.
What, so if the bees from the Buckfast colony went in there, you mean?
Yeah. I mean, at the moment, they seem totally fixated on all the spring flowers. So I don't think they've probably not even noticed anything. You know, they've not noticed the entrance. And it's not really robbing time because there's so much going off. I mean, they were all over the forget-me-nots. And I noticed my friend on the allotment, she's got this beautiful ornamental currant. It's beautiful and it's pink and it's got these little tiny flowers and they were literally all over it with lots of other bees as well. I saw a tiny mining bee and I saw the hairy-footed flower bee. I saw a buff-tailed bumblebee. I saw so many bees on this ornamental currant and I thought, I'm going to get one of those because they're absolutely to die for.
And do they flower just now or do they continue to flower?
Well, because they're an ornamental currant, they are going to have a little currant. Not that you'd eat it, but I noticed the bees were also all over the gooseberries, for instance. The gooseberry flowers are just coming out and there was lots of honeybees on them. But these currants, they'll only come out in spring.
Right, yeah.
Oh, but it was such a beautiful scent. And it's definitely a must-have, I think, in a garden. Absolutely great. Yeah, if you like a bush. I love
do
a,
like
bush.
A bush.
Oh, I like a bush. I love a bush.
Oh, I love to trim my bush.
Oh, well, I don't have to trim mine. It's very easy to maintain. But I've...
Lucky you.
Yeah, lucky me, eh? You wouldn't realise, but it is, yeah.
With your easy-to-maintain bush. I just wanted to ask you, because you are very sort of vigilant with your bees, you're on it, right on it.
Yeah.
Are other beekeepers as vigilant as you, do you think?
Well, I think other beekeepers are vigilant, but I suppose it's all down to experience, isn't it? I mean, we had this terrible disease, EFB, and we don't want it again. You know, it's as clear as that. But I do know it's a very hard disease to sometimes to clean out of your apiary. And I do know other beekeepers that have had EFB, and then I hear that they've got it 2 years later. Now, that's because they're using the same equipment and maybe they have cleaned it, but maybe not thoroughly enough. And we're going to find out, aren't we, with these package bees. I mean, it just seems such a coincidence that me and Lynn have both had a problem and that we had EFB. So was it already in the hive? Who knows?
Right,
we're
going
to find out. And Brian will tell us, and it's going to be interesting to find out what's what. But I might have to shut down the hive before then, because if there's nothing coming out, you know, I'm going to keep a watch this weekend. But I've just got to think about the other bees.
Would you consider sort of moving the hive somewhere else, you know, a little bit further back?
Well, not really. Because remember that the bees, you know, if they come out, if you move the hive, if you move it less than, you know, about a couple of feet, it's very hard for them to remember where it was. It's not like if you came back and your house was two doors down, you'd be a bit confused, but you'd have a quick look for it and you'd be able to find it.
Yeah.
But bees can't do that. They'd have to, it'd take them a long time to find the hive if it was, even if it was a few feet away.
Right. Anyway, I'm sure the Buckfasts aren't interested. Like you say, they've got lots of forage of their own. They're busy out there. There's nothing to rob in the Italians, is there?
So it's not really. There's a bit of fondant, you know.
But they don't need that, do they? They're making
their
own.
No, they've got their... They're making their own. Absolutely. Yeah. So anyway, it's all interesting. But I've just been, you know, enjoying looking out for them on these sunnier, warm warm days where there's a warm patch of heat, you know, and just spotting them. And it's so, so nice. And I think since I've been doing this podcast, I'm more knowledgeable about plants because yeah. we've had some wonderful experts. You know, before I knew that they liked, like, I've got this, I had a heli. Is it a heli or healy?
A hebe.
No, not a hebe.
Oh.
A heli.
Oh, I don't know helis.
Yeah, so a hebe is the little spring flower, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's
I've got
really
a hebe,
pretty.
Yeah,
that's lovely. And then a heli is a bush and it's got these little white and you sometimes you get them in purple and pink little flowers on. Mm. It's quite a woody bush and the bees love it. And I've had one in my garden since I got here, you know, 20 years ago, and it's been great. But it's also been totally growing together with this cotton Easter, which is another big sort of woody bush that's got these teeny, teeny little flowers on that then turn to red berries and are great for the birds. But right. the bees love this cotton Easter. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Are you going to put all these on the Instagram feed? Because this is all very helpful. And if you could take a picture of your neighbour's currant, that would be fantastic.
I'm going to do that, Jane. That's a really good idea. Mm. But this cotton Easter got so big, I never knew the name for it. For years, I've just watched the bees on it. I thought that lovely bush that the bees like, but I never knew what it was. And I never really knew many names of many bushes. But anyway, it weighed so heavy on this healy that it's killed it.
Oh.
So it snapped off the base of it. And now, you know, that one's died. And so the cotton Easter is going to take over.
Take that space, yeah.
But I'm looking for something to replace the healy, so I might get another one, or is it a heli? I could be saying all these names completely wrong, but I hope people will, if I post it on the Instagram, people will know.
How do you spell heli?
H-E-L-E.
Oh, well, it could be either, couldn't it? Somebody will correct you out there.
But, you know, it's been a joy to sort of learn about these plants and how much the bees really like them. And I've been planting a few more things on the allotment.
When we spoke last week, you said that you'd virtually just got soil to eat on your allotment. A bit of lettuce yeah. and some soil. Has that improved? Has that improved slightly?
Well, there are a few additions on the allotment.
Tell me.
What's on the allotment? But it's really around and about now for everybody to eat is the wild garlic. I think I talked about that a few weeks ago, maybe. But
how would you use wild garlic? In what sort of, you know, dish? How would you use it?
Well, it's lovely as a pesto.
Ooh.
But you can put it into a quiche or even a soup. And I've just been picking handfuls of it. I can't stop eating it. Everybody's
and it's just the flower. It's just the flower.
No, it's the green leaves.
Oh, so it's not the flower.
No, it's not the flower. It's just the green leaves. And there's also this, I think it's called three-cornered leek. It's another sort of garlic that's growing at the moment. And you can spot it because it's got like three corners, like triangle, and then it's very garlicky. You can't really miss it, and it's got a white flower on the end. It looks, you think, oh, is it a white bluebell?
Well, that's what I'm thinking of. When I said, do you eat the flower, that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, well, you can eat the white flower, yeah. But these three-cornered leeks are very good as well, and if you get a nice fat one, it's like a little mini leek. I've got loads
really?
Of them in the garden. They're like weeds, yeah.
Wow.
And then the other thing that I've tried this week is ground elder. Liz Knight, a lovely forager that has come to my attention on Instagram, has come to my attention on Instagram.
Yes,
actually, that's not actually, you know what? That's not actually true. She hasn't come to my attention on Instagram. A friend introduced me to her and she's been eating.
I liked it though. It sounded very official. She's come to my attention.
She was talking about ground elder and, you know, people go on about it takes over the garden. But actually the Romans brought it over as a pot plant because it's full of goodness and it grows at the side of, you know, hedgerows. It grows over people's gardens and it's got quite an attractive white flower that bees love. But it really takes over the garden. But if you get it before the flowers go on it, it's a very nice, it's a lovely, yummy, a spinachy type of green.
Oh, so it's not like elderflower, as in elderflower cordial.
No, it looks, the leaves look very similar, but it grows on the ground. It's not so tall. I mean, you've got to, when you're foraging for these things, it's like mushrooms, like anything. You've got to be really sure, because there's a lot of these wild carrots, you know, like hemlock and stuff like that, that could kill you.
Mm.
You don't want to take a leaf of hemlock. You've got to be certain. But there's a lot of information out there, and I think you could spot it. But yeah, I tried that and I'm still alive. I'm not dead.
Are you not? How can you prove that you're still alive and that I'm not talking to you as you've gone into your spirit world?
Mm. Because I think I sound quite clear. Maybe if I sounded a bit more, if you could just hear a or a Jane. Hey up, Jane, if you just heard one or two words, that might be, because that's how I always think with my dad, you know. When my dad first died, I don't know whether I told you, but I could hear his voice like talking to me so clear in the first few days that he died. I literally had a conversation with him.
What was he saying?
Well, I spoke to him on three occasions and he said he was fine. He was just floating around and it was very nice. And he'd met Beryl Reid. And I was a bit surprised by that.
Mm.
But he said it was very nice just floating around. And then he sang Happy Birthday to me when I rang him on my birthday. I got my phone and I rang him just to pretend ringing. Obviously, I didn't ring his number. And then he sang Happy Birthday to me.
And then
just after he died, I thought, because I always used to speak to him on the phone, so I thought, what shall I do? And Tom said, well, why don't you just phone him? Just like, and talk to him with your phone, which was seemed a bit ridiculous. But I just said, hey up, Dad, are you all right? And he went, yeah, of course I am. I'm fine. And I could hear his voice so clear. And I know a lot of people do talk about that when they're, you know, friends or family have passed away. And I know there was this brilliant project in Japan where this lady, after the tsunami, she put a phone in her garden, like an ornamental phone, and people queued up in her town or her village to come and, like, speak to their loved ones that had died on this phone.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, how amazing.
I know. It's so lovely. In fact, I put that in the musical that I'm writing because it's such a nice thing to... For me, it was so nice to talk to my dad, you know. And now all I can hear, that's why I'm saying to you, all I can hear now of my dad is him laughing with me, a bit like you and me laugh when we go, if I start laughing or if I'm eating a cake or something like that, I can hear him going, ooh, yeah.
That's lovely, isn't it, that you so tuned in to him?
Yeah, it's
that's
so
brilliant.
Nice. Yeah, it's lovely.
Oh, so lovely. I don't think you've mentioned this musical that you're doing, Esther. What is it?
Yes, well, I've been writing the story for a musical, and it's about a hoarder. So I'm working with this company called Sheep Soup, and we went to Canada with the first half of it, and we worked with this producer called Michael Rubinoff, who's done a musical called Come From Away in the West End and around the world. Anyway, he supported us, and we've worked with his students at Sheridan University with the first half, and we're supposed to be going back to do it, but because of coronavirus, it's been a bit difficult. So now we've written the whole of it, and the guys have been working on the music, and we're hoping to go and do a workshop at the National Studio at the end of the summer. Yeah, so that's going to be very exciting, and it's all about a hoarder, and it's her relationship with her hoard, and of course that is a lot to do with grief and loss and, you know, these emotional relationships with objects that become so important. So it's been quite good for me because I've used some of the stuff, you know, with my own grief about my dad, and it's been really a good experience.
Oh, lovely. And so have you written the songs as well?
No, I haven't written the songs, but I've worked with the guys who are writing the songs. You know, we've shared ideas, and that's been great. I've really enjoyed that. And I hope that you'll be in it, Jane.
Ooh, can I do my opera singing?
Yeah, of course.
I am surrounded by my objects. My objects are feeding me, yet they're killing me at the same time.
Yeah, I think that will definitely be one of the songs in the musical.
That's the hit. That's the main one.
Absolutely. Yes.
Thank you.
went up to the allotment and we were planting, you know, lots of seeds. And I've got some of my seeds here, actually, to remind me what I planted to tell you. Mm. We were planting lots of kale and beetroot. And with the beetroot, you have to keep watering it. So I have to keep going back every day to water it. So the bulb actually, well, it's not really a bulb, is it? The sort of globe swells. Yeah. And so you have to really water the seeds so they take off. So I've been doing that because I love beetroot.
Yeah, I like beetroot. I made a beetroot tart recently and it was delicious.
Was it?
I'll send you the receipt.
And, yeah, my lettuces are a big hit. You know, I've got loads of lettuces all growing in the polytunnel. And I've got my broad beans are flowering now in the polytunnel. And they're quite doing quite well just in the bed.
Yeah.
And what else? I've planted lots of sunflowers.
What about asparagus? I love asparagus.
Well, no asparagus. I haven't got that on this plot. I had it on my old plot, but it takes quite a long time to establish an asparagus bed.
Oh, does it?
Once you leave the asparagus to flower, the bees love that. It's got some lovely little yellow flowers on.
Ooh.
Yeah. But Tom had a bit of an accident.
Ooh.
We've got the nematodes for the slugs, and we put those in the ground. And then we got these shiny copper strips called slug tape.
Right.
And you can put it round pots, and we put it round the edge of the polytunnel and round the beds. Anyway, so Tom had been doing that, and he'd obviously got some in his pocket, along with a rechargeable battery for his vape machine.
Ooh.
Anyway, suddenly he went, ah, oh, ah, ah, and he was screaming and jumping up and down, and I could smell something. Anyway, this copper slug tape had made a circuit onto the rechargeable battery, and it had gone boiling hot in his pocket.
Oh, how amazing.
And it was in his back pocket, so he had to take his trousers down, and I saw his bum, and it was ever so red.
Was it? And was it outside?
Well, it was just when we got home, actually.
Oh, so it wasn't on the allotment that he was showing his bum.
It obviously, as we walked back from the plot after we'd been planting the seeds and he'd been doing the slug tape, it had gone into this circuit. Oh, it made me laugh.
I thought you were going to say that he had some nuts in his pocket and that he ate the slug thingies, copper things, rather than the nuts. I didn't think that you were going to say something about a battery. That's a very good story. I think you should include that in one of your things.
Anyway, it was the laugh of April.
It was the laugh of him. And, because you could have a character that could hoard batteries and then create circuits.
Oh, yeah, they could. And then they could blow themselves up. Because a lot of people in hoards do actually end up having fires or, you know.
Yeah, well, it must be very dangerous.
Well, in our hoard, there's a missing cat that's been gone for years and then it's found dead, flattened, under a lot of Vogue magazines.
Really?
Yeah, and it rises out of the hoard as a character and sings a song.
Oh, really?
Mm.
On to a cheerier note.
I know you don't like talking about sad things.
No. I went to Costco a couple of days ago. I'm not a member of Costco. A friend of mine is. And I was going out looking for my pans. I'm still searching for pans, Esther. I went to this professional catering shop in Shaftesbury Avenue. And they were very expensive in there and very heavy. So I didn't want those. And then I asked a friend who's a member of Costco if she would take me there. And we went there. And I didn't come back with pans. I came back with pine nuts.
Oh.
If you're a member of Costco and you like pine nuts, that's your place.
Oh, wow. Pine nuts are very good.
But it's not solved my pan situation.
Yes, so where are you going to go next then?
Well, I think I'm going to go to John Lewis next.
Well, you'll have a nice time in there.
When I went on Monday, last Monday, which was the opening of the shops on the 12th, it was packed.
Absolutely.
Heaving with people.
But me and Gloria went down yesterday and it was packed. But everybody was in such a jolly mood. It was so much fun.
Where did you go?
Well, we went to Liberty because I wanted to get a nice tablecloth.
Oh, right, yeah.
So I got this really bright coloured tablecloth with all nice yellow They look like tulips, actually. In fact, I've got it on my little table now that I'm working on.
Now, didn't you get a tablecloth for Christmas, Esther?
Yeah, but I didn't like it.
Oh. Yeah. Who bought it for you?
Tom bought me a tablecloth, and it was like a children's painting workshop tablecloth with these silly little graphic bees and mushrooms on it. And it's so plasticky that I'm sure if you put a cup on it, it would slip off. I wasn't very grateful, and Tom was very disappointed that I didn't like it.
Oh, so you've not used it?
No, I've put it in the wardrobe.
Oh, perhaps you could eBay it.
Or I might wait till my niece comes round, does some painting outside, and I put it on there and just strap her into the chair so she doesn't slip off it.
Oh, is that Bonnie?
Yeah. When Bonnie comes round, she can do some painting on it.
I used to have a character that I did for the kids called Bonnie. And she spoke like that.
Oh.
She was called Bonnie, but she wasn't a Bonnie lass at all. She's very rude.
What sort of things did she say to the kids? Like if they said mum?
She used to embarrass them in public and speak really loudly. So one time we went to Florida and she'd speak to people. Well, I think it might have been Los Angeles. I can't remember. But she used to speak to people like that, you know, in America. Which way is it to so-and-so? And they go, excuse me, ma'am. Wait, can't you understand me or something? And the kids were cringing.
Oh, God, that is bad. Oh, flipping heck. That's the sort of thing my dad used to do. He used to pretend that he had a parrot on his shoulder and he'd go, oh, Jim lad, and he'd like walk with a sort of, as if he got like a, you know, a wooden leg. He was a pirate who lost his leg at sea with a parrot on his shoulder, and he'd do that, and I used to be so embarrassed.
It's so embarrassing for kids. I used to do it in boots as well if I was asking for something.
What did you say?
Have you got any canister? It's for my daughter. She's got a bit of a problem.
I'm going to try that just for fun. I'm going to pretend to be Julia and do it like that and say, have you got any sort of containers that you can catch bees in? Because, you know, I do need something like that for my bees. They just keep flying off and I can't catch them.
Yes, I think Julia's good, but she's quite polite, isn't she? I think that you should choose a non-polite character, especially if you want to embarrass your children. Yeah. I was going to ask you, just to get a little bit back to the bees. Mm-hmm. Have Gloria and Jeannie ever shown any interest in bees?
Yeah. Well, when we first got the bees, I got them both a little suit and they both looked at the bees.
Is that the one that I wear?
Yeah, the small one. Well, now you've got your own very nice sheriff suit.
The one that goes up my bum.
Yeah. And Jeannie really showed an interest and then she just went off it.
Why did she go off it?
I don't know. They just weren't that interested. I mean, they do like to hear how the bees are getting on. And I sometimes wonder whether they'll become beekeepers themselves, but I don't know. I don't know whether they will. It is quite an unusual
it's quite niche,
hobby,
isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
But do they sort of impress people when if it ever came up into conversation? Would they have enough knowledge to be actually quite impressive?
They do know a lot about bees, yeah, because, of course, that's, you know, I'm always talking about bees. And now, at this time of year, every time I go to the hive, I always come back and report everything, because you know what I'm like? I just have to say everything that's happened. It's like a sort of Tourette's.
Yeah.
You know, in our flat, if everybody's in, they all have to hear what's happened with the bees. So they do know, and I think it's helped them be aware and interested in the environment, really.
So when Gloria went on her Southeast Asia trip, did she have any sort of bee experience out there?
No, she did spot a bee and she did actually message me to say she'd seen one, but she didn't go in search of bees. I think she was just in search of having a great time and having, you know, going to parties. So, no, she doesn't.
Yeah.
She's not that interested in it. The other thing I just wanted to let you know, I've planted all my squashes because I do like to plant very comedy squashes. And the one that I'm doing this year, I've done it before, it's called the Candy Roaster. And it's so big, it's like a giant baby. Oh, it's ever so nice, yeah.
So just hoping... one?
No, I've planted a few seeds, about 5 seeds, and I'm hoping to get a couple of the candy roasters because they're a right laugh. They're massive and they've got a funny sort of little teat on the end. Oh, they're real comedy value. They're very good and tasty.
Oh, can I come round when you have those?
Oh, yeah, you can. You can hold one if you like. I get a little push chair for it for you to wheel one home.
I'd like that.
Have you got any plans for this week, Jane? Apart from pan searching, of course.
Pan searching. My daughter, Molly, is coming because she's going to come and work with me on the Brighton project because right. I need to get up to date with her music. Mm-hmm. So that's happening over the weekend.
Will you be having a laugh and a meal with her?
I've already prepared the menu.
What is it?
Well, I'm going to make her... the lunch that I made you, ooh, which was the sort of puff pastry pizza, ooh, upside yeah. down pizza. Mm-hmm. You called it like a tart tartan, didn't you? Yeah.
Yes.
And Texan new potato salad.
Ooh, okay. You're going to talk like that when you eat it? Oh, no, that's a bit mean. Sorry.
And then I made a lovely tomato and pomegranate salad last yeah. weekend. So I think I'll probably make that as well. And also my infamous Ottolenghi mushroom lasagna, ooh. Which I'm going to make for our team at some point round our house. I've got some in the freezer, so we're going to have that.
Oh, God, that would be good. Maybe I could catch a swarm and bring it round for your garden.
Oh, too much, Esther.
Okay.
So, Esther, this has been very informative and a lovely episode. Goodbye. Love you.
Oh, you daft bugger.
Okay. I love you too. I really enjoyed this episode too. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
And I'll call you.
Queen Bees is written and created by Esther Coles and Jane Horrocks. It is produced by Claire Broughton, Andy Goddard and John Wakefield, and partly recorded at The Hives on my allotment near Crouch End in London. Our title music is Sweet Nothing by Amy Mae Ellis and Will Cookson. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Queen Bees Pod for pictures and videos from The Hive. Queen Bees is a Hattrick podcast.